The WHO UN Agenda 2130 depopulation plan via 5G 60 gigahertz millimeter waves and toxic coronavirus vaccine injections. Part 1. Airborne contagious viruses do not exist and are not planned or escaped bioweapons from secret government labs. Those countless pandemic outbreak movies and TV programs are not there to get you ready for one. They are to program you to believe in an absurd fiction in order to con you. Germs, bacteria, and virus proteins are created inside your body, by your body, and are not contagious. The only way to get foreign human or animal bacteria and viral tissue inside your body is by injection. You cannot catch or ingest animal virus proteins from eating sick bats or pigs. The stomach and intestinal enzymes turn them into amino acids and dipeptides. 60 gigahertz millimeter radiation waves from 5G towers create the same bodily distress symptoms as the fake coronavirus. These radiation waves also create the same exact protein nucleic acid response in your body from the resulting tissue damage that the coronavirus tests are purposely looking for. The patented coronavirus vaccine will indeed have toxic foreign human or animal hybrid viral proteins in it, as well as dozens of other dangerous toxins. Problem, reaction, solution. Vaccines, and now microwaves, have often been used by eugenicists, technocrats, and transhumanists to cull populations of undesirables and dissidents. As 5G 60 gigahertz millimeter wave towers get switched on in more and more cities, they need a scapegoat for the mass deaths and respiratory illnesses that will follow. They need you to believe at all costs that it is the coronavirus and not the 5G towers. They care not if you believe you caught it from your bat soup or your neighbor's cough, or if you think it's a secret government bioweapon they purposely released. So long as you're too ignorant to figure out coronavirus doesn't exist at all, except in the lab-created vaccine they will inject you with later. And so you will go willingly into a quarantine camp if you are targeted as a dissident protester or undesirable by those behind Agenda 2130.
How are you? Today I want to bring you some insights regarding the cause and the symptoms, okay? Note the word symptoms of CV that you have probably not yet heard. And no, this isn't about some patent or some P4 lab close to the seafood market, but it's about something far more profound. It is concerning the impacts, such as the inability to breathe, such as having a cough with no phlegm. Rather odd for pneumonia, wouldn't you say? And things like suddenly falling over with no other signs of sickness. All of these things can be related to something completely different than a virus. Mm-hmm. So let's explore this little reported fact about what has been happening in CH. Did you know that this country went live with fully functional FIVEG? Here you can see the announcement from a Chinese website all the way back from 2018 in April that WUHAN, we all know that city by now, don't we, will be a pilot city. Here it says, a large-scale FIVEG network engineering program will be piloted in Wuhan.
It ends by saying, by 2020, 5G network will cover every corner of the city and be available at an affordable price. So if I go to the link and copy it, and then if I go to Facebook to share it, you can't share this link. And your post couldn't be shared because this link goes against our community standards. Interesting.
this country went live with, yep, look at your screen, guys. It went live by fall 2019. Furthermore, their hospitals have been supercharged with this most of all, FIVEG or 60 gigahertz frequencies. Yes, here you can see Huawei, CH's biggest telecom provider, is attempting to show their philanthropy by donating FIVEG equipment to that. Everybody heard about the hospital that went up in 6 days, right? Did you hear that they donated the equipment to it before they even were functioning? Oh, isn't that nice of them? There were tons of articles all over the internet I was able to find talking about the hospitals being completely set up with this frequency-bearing technology. Now, what does it do? For those of you who don't already know, in 2015, over 200 scientists from 41 different countries already communicated their alarm to the United Nations, to the UN, and to the WHO. By 2019, 26,000 scientists had signed a petition calling for a moratorium, an urgent and complete halt to the FIVEG rollout due to its having been proven, quote, harmful for humans and the environment. So, FIVEG, specifically the 60 gigahertz frequency that is being used in CH right now, and by the way, which is slated to be released all across America, has very specific biological impacts that very few people realize. How these impacts from this radiation can perfectly mimic the pandemic that everyone is up in arms about. While you will see truly viral, non-stop news feeds pushing out the fear, the VIRUS coverage, and while it could be true, like I posted in my last video of leaked footage, that CH is underreporting these numbers, what they are not telling you, and they will not tell you, are legitimate reports on the road of exactly what symptoms these people are experiencing, because then you too can start to put it together. But also, you're not going to see any correlation of the timing of this outbreak to the release of the 60 gigahertz frequency. So, we know that 60 gigahertz has been released all across China because, like America, they too have decided to make that specific millimeter wave unlicensed. Why does that matter? Just like the FCC allocated 2.4 gigahertz to be unlicensed, which is why all your Wi-Fi routers, your landline cordless phone, even your baby monitors are running on 2.4 gigahertz microwaves. Because the companies that make products that run on microwaves, they don't want to pay a separate license fee to use it. And so what people don't know is that the FCC didn't just randomly pick 2.4 gigahertz. In fact, it was selected by this entity right here. Look at your screen to see it, because I'm not going to say it. Right. These guys were responsible for its selection. Do you know what other products they make? Now, this 2.4 is a frequency known to cause these problems I won't go into now, but my point is, in the same vein, 60 gigahertz is also selected to be the next unlicensed frequency, and so we the people will be bombarded with it. 60 gigahertz has a very distinct impact on none other than oxygen itself. Yes, here are the articles released by companies who are touting the benefits of 60 gigahertz. They openly admit that 60 gigahertz is absorbable by oxygen. You can see in this graph here its impact on oxygen. All the frequencies before 60 gig are not impacted. Then once it hits that frequency, it spikes and becomes hugely absorbed by oxygen. Now, in this article by the company selling products that are going to run on 60 gig, they say that it's going to help its interference levels. And most of us know from mainstream releases promoting FIVEG that things like water and trees are going to get in the way of this frequency. Knowing that this frequency impacts oxygen, now does it make sense to you how possibly when you mess with the absorption of oxygen in the human body? Let me give you one guess which organ is going to suffer first. The way that the 60 gigahertz impacts oxygen is this. Oxygen, the atom, is O. Oxygen, the molecule, is O2, two atoms together. Now, these two atoms creating the oxygen molecule are sharing some electrons. 60 gigahertz causes the electrons surrounding oxygen molecules to spin. Right, somewhat akin to how high-powered microwaves running on 2.4 are impacting molecules in foods such as water. They're heating in part by impacting those molecules to rotate or oscillate with each wave. The movement energy from the rotation of these super tiny water molecules is actually helping to heat the rest of the food. So in a similar way that 2.4 causes H2O to oscillate, 60 gigahertz, even at lower powers, is causing the electrons on oxygen molecules to spin. And as you might imagine, changes to the spin frequencies on oxygen electrons can have impacts on human biology. When you breathe in, the reason that breathing air into your lungs gets oxygen into your blood, and therefore important places like your brain, is because the oxygen entering into your lungs gets picked up by a very important iron-containing protein called hemoglobin in your blood. But the unfortunate impact of oxygen molecules spinning the electrons is that it makes the hemoglobin unable to uptake the oxygen and get it to the rest of your body. Now, this info was taken from a textbook called Magnetobiology, Underlying Physical Problems. But even beyond this, isn't the fact that the telecom companies are admitting that 60 gigahertz is absorbable by oxygen just stunning information? Is this all starting to make sense? What they are calling the CV is acute respiratory disease. And while you can't believe 100% anything coming out of China, it seems to me there were enough leaks of people suddenly falling over in the streets that the CH government doesn't want people talking about or sharing, with no other apparent illness. Guys, listen, CV is not new, okay? It's a cold. It's a flu. That's why it says on the side of hand sanitizers like Purell and the side of a can of Lysol that it kills it. It's common enough to be listed on the most common disinfectants. But now the CH government is admitting that people can have virtually no symptoms and suddenly fall over. No symptoms, but then they can still have it. What is it? Lack of oxygen can do that too, right? I mean, let's use common sense here. What happens to you when you have the flu? Right? You start to feel bad, achy, you call in sick, you don't want to go outside, you go lay down in bed, mama brings you some chicken noodle soup, right? Or you just bopping around fully clothed, doing normal things, and fall over. If your lungs are not able to put oxygen in your blood, how long would it take you to fall over? Not long. Now, this was an interesting paper released by one specific hospital in WHAN, and this doctor with this YouTube channel, he was going over them in great detail. You know, a lot of people have a lot of attention on this, but unfortunately, they're not looking at it through the eyes of the FIVEG that I'm sharing with you now, and so a lot of things to him don't make sense, but when you look at it knowing this, it all fits together rather perfectly. Of the people admitted and studied in this particular hospital, they got real specific about the symptoms, and so they broke it down from outpatient to those admitted in ICU. And of the people admitted into intensive care, it says this: over 60% of people had acute respiratory distress, respiratory failure. Symptoms included shortness of breath, rapid breathing, and bluish skin tone. Can that happen with lack of oxygen? Yeah. They had arrhythmia. I don't know how much you guys remember, but microwave frequencies can absolutely cause this. He couldn't explain it with his normal background. There was also shock. That is a state of insufficient blood flow to the tissues as a result of problems with the circulatory system. Now, of all the muscles that work really hard, wouldn't you say your heart is one of them? So when you start running, you start breathing hard. Why? Your muscles need more oxygen to continue working, right? Now, if you're not getting that into your muscles because it isn't coming into your hemoglobin, there's no feeding your muscles, including your heart, thus, right, acute cardiac injury, which is also listed in this. Now, while it's true, pneumonia also causes respiratory distress and an inability to get proper oxygen. That's true. However, don't we all know by now that pneumonia causes your lungs to do one basic thing? Fill with fluid. Fill with phlegm. Yummy. Almost every 101 tutorial on pneumonia says the same thing. The main problems with pneumonia are the lack of oxygen as a result of phlegm. And how you can even tell what phase of pneumonia you're in according to the color of your phlegm. Well, check this out. Now, much of what I'm finding regarding this CV is pointing to people who don't actually have fluid in their lungs at all, but they have dry coughs, not wet coughs like this, but dry coughs with no phlegm. So in the same report, this doctor found the same thing, dry cough. But also, these social leaks of media, people who are using social media, they're so desperate. They're desperate to get help. Here they're saying the same thing. Look at this. Inability to breathe and dry cough. So please, would one of you virologists care to explain to me why these people have respiratory distress, aka can't breathe, if there's no phlegm causing the problems with oxygen uptake? I mean, besides the 60 gigahertz frequency making hemoglobin unable to properly bind to oxygen. Now, a lot of people had scans. Scans are showing that people have damage to the lungs. But how do we know that this isn't due to other repercussions of millimeter waves on oxygen itself? Also, it's mentioned, you know, acute kidney injury. We know kidneys can be damaged when there's so little oxygen in the blood that the other gases become higher, like carbon dioxide and the other ones. Acidosis of the blood happens. Yeah. CV seems to cause many problems, okay? They can all be tied to a lack of oxygen and acidosis of the blood. Now, we know that the impacts of magnetic frequencies can have a result of things like seizures, right? How often do people with pneumonia have seizures? But we have seen tons of leaked footage of people with exactly that, seizures. I've also heard fungal infections mentioned in relation to this, and electromagnetic fields can absolutely exacerbate fungus and mold. Now, of course, people talk about fevers in the media, but they also say they can have all these problems without the fever. I mean, how many times have you had flu without the fever? But Dana, what about those quarantine cruise ships? They weren't even in the city of WHAN. These ships that were quarantined just so happened to be from the Diamond Princess line of cruise ships. So let's check out this PR release from Princess Cruises. Continuing Princess Cruises' comeback new promise, a commitment focused on investing more than $450 million across the global fleet. One of the upgrades that they go into great detail explaining on their website with high-end marketing videos showing exactly how it works is their network connectivity. Here's from their press release. Carnival Corporation and Regal Princess announces they will, quote, establish a new industry apex in connectivity capabilities. It says, using its newly developed connectivity service, Medallion Net, and working with SES Networks. More about them in a minute. They talk about attempting to achieve unheard of bandwidth and how Medallion Net is made possible through, quote, an inventive array of an antenna, networks, equipment, and configuration innovations that combine to make the Regal Princess the only vessel on the planet that is currently capable of achieving this speed. Well, according to the SES website, there are some Navy ships that can do this, powered by our O3B fleet of MEO or medium Earth orbit satellites. Yes, they are admitting to working with SES, and although they're calling it Wi-Fi, that is a misnomer considering that the company seems to be using millimeter waves. Here are a few clips from some of their videos.
Stream movies, shows, and sports, as well as make Wi-Fi phone calls and video conference calls like FaceTime. That's all possible in large part thanks to what lies on board, what flies in the skies above, and the way we fuse all the technology together to ensure your experience is as great as possible. Medallion Net uses mid-Earth orbit satellites, or MEO, that are positioned 8,000 kilometers away. There are 20 MEO satellites surrounding the equator that see our Medallion-class ships, which aligns with destinations like London and Vancouver, and which corresponds to approximately 80% of Earth's surface. GEO satellites actually still reign supreme when enabling connectivity in the polar regions. This is because GEO is not impacted by rain and weather. So onboard Princess Cruises ships that feature Medallion Net, we leverage MEO and GEO satellites to keep you connected to the things you love most and seamlessly shift to GEO when in the north. Thanks, GEO. In these tougher conditions, we're glad you're there.
So by admitting in their own video that water can interfere with the connectivity is the giveaway that they are using millimeter waves and not just the type of frequencies that Wi-Fi runs on today. Now, when you look a little more into this company, SES, that's when you find this crazy information. You can see they're presently teaming up with governments, including the U.S. government, And, of course, our M-I-L-I-T-A-R-Y.
Iran has a new tool to ease tensions with crowds, but they're not using it just yet. Peter Ducey, in advance, tries it out for himself.
You can't see it, hear it, or smell it, but it makes unruly mobs do this. The Defense Department's Active Denial System, a non-lethal weapon that can be used to control crowds, secure perimeters, and keep pirates at bay. It could be a game changer.
This is one of the things that we can shoot first and ask questions later. Normally you can't do that.
The military says the active denial system is not radioactive, it's not a microwave, and it's not a laser beam. It's instead a man-sized beam of millimeter waves that can be fired from up to 1,000 meters away that are designed to get the subject, whoever's standing on this X, really, really hot so that they move. And it's about 50 degrees out here right now, but I just felt like it was about 1,000, and I've never been inside a tub that somebody dropped a hairdryer in, but I would imagine that that's what it feels like.
After about 1.5 seconds, 1/64th of an inch of my skin was 130 degrees, but as soon as I stepped away, it was over, and the DOD says there aren't any lingering effects.
There's no cancer risk, there's no risk to a fetus or reproductive capability, it's just heat.
But the DOD admits this system does have a drawback.
We are propagating through the air, we are therefore relatively line of sight. And so we need to be line of sight with targets.
A prototype costs $10 million, and there are no plans to deploy one anytime soon.
When you look at tabs like this one that starts intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance missions, one realizes this company's products and services catalog looks like a homeland security dream or privacy lover's nightmare, depending on how you want to see it. And here you can also see on the SES website that they are using these satellites to beam none other than what? 5G. So, are these passengers getting sick from a VIRUS? That, by the way, they are admitting that the people on the ship haven't been tested for. Or are they getting sick from millimeter wave frequencies being beamed at them even while they sit trapped in quarantine? So what about all those other cities that people have left CH4 and still got their CV virus? Well, all the cities that I found that supposedly have this, this has happened to so far, they are people who are already openly advertising that they have FIVEG themselves. Places like South Korea, check. Hong Kong, check.
You know, all over the internet and every news media outlet out there, everybody's talking about the swine flu. I mean, it's, you know, it just arrives on the scene out of nowhere, and it is kind of suspicious. And my guest today is none other than Agnes van der Planets. How you doing?
Fine. How about you?
Very good. Very good. Eating raw. Eating raw. First of all, one of the things I was amazed that I learned in the email was the nature of these viruses. Viruses are not living things, are they?
No, they're not. It's not like a microbe. It isn't like a microbe at all. They are protein waste products in solvent solution, and they can have animal tissue in them. Now, you cannot transfer animal tissue of that nature, any kind of an animal flu. Well, let me explain what a flu is. A flu is a solvent detoxification. A cold is normally a bacterial detoxification where microbes eat damaged tissue that is of a waste product, and when they consume that tissue, they can consume about 50 times their weight in 24 hours, and they have a waste product of about 1 to 5%. So that's like you eating 50 pounds of food in one day and having a 1 to 5-pound waste product to deal with the next day. That's a good janitor.
Yeah, really?
You know, so we want colds. Now, flus occur when people are so toxic that bacteria cannot help break down the toxic waste products that there's because there's inorganic substances like chemicals from pesticides, inorganic fertilizers, food additives, Pepsi Cola, all those sodas which are just chemical, they have nothing to do with food. When those chemicals get in the body and saturate the body and they destroy the bacteria, then our bodies have to make a solvent or many varieties of solvents to dissolve tissue. So the body may make about 300,000 types of viruses that are specific to a specific tissue within a particular cell so that the whole cell its integrity isn't disrupted. So the whole cell doesn't die. It's just cleaning out, let's say, the veins in a particular area of the cell, whether it be the veins for neurological functions or lymphatic, which is cleansing, or the blood itself within the cell. So those are specific cleansing viruses for specific areas in the body. Now, no time does it ever get to the point where you have more than, let's say, three viruses at a particular time in any particular body.
Okay.
Now, when we talk, if you're in a laboratory looking at it, there's nothing live there. You've got soaps. You've got solvents, just like we have soaps and solvents to dissolve grease off of your garage floor from your car. Now, what happens when you use a solvent, you use water in relationship with it because water is the main solvent on this planet.
Universal
it rains,
solvent,
dissolves right. rock, plants can eat.
Right.
So water is our main solvent. If you look under an archaeological book, the first thing listed under solvent is water.
Right.
So we mix a compound of proteins or chemicals which with water create a dissolution of substance. In this particular case, let's say the swine flu, you're talking about a specific tissue of a pig. And of course, a pig is not going to have a virus unless it is so toxic from poor feed and vaccines and all kinds of medication that it can't use its natural bacterial cleansing.
And that obviously is happening because if you've ever seen animal husbandry, how it relates to swine, I mean, they feed them garbage. They literally feed them, garbage. Everything that people throw away and is rotten, they feed it to pigs. We have swine flu has arisen because we have sick pigs out there who cannot, the necessary viral response is inadequate for them to take care of their own bodies, so they manifest this swine flu, correct? I mean, that's
correct.
Okay.
Now, you can have 300,000 varieties of swine flu because of the different complex 300,000 different types of tissue to be cleansed within a pig, just like within any other animal organism. However, they cannot cross species.
So how did we get swine flu then?
It's been made in a factory and injected.
Okay. So in theory, a virus, first of all, there are good viruses, obviously, as you just
all
described.
All viruses are good
okay.
viruses.
All right. So they're obviously necessary responses to something that's happening biologically in us.
Correct.
And so
viruses have no nucleus. There's no respiratory system. There's no circulatory system. There's no digestive system. Viruses are not alive. That's like saying Tide soap is alive.
Okay.
They're not alive. They are solvents. They are soaps. Well, what's happening is, like I said, we have colds, which are mainly bacterial. which go in and feed on toxic tissue that's been damaged. Waste products that we are too, we don't eat well enough, we don't eat all raw, and therefore we accumulate toxicity. So bacteria have to come in and eat that waste products because we can't keep up with all the waste.
Gotcha.
Okay, so that's what a cold is.
Okay.
A flu is mainly viral. Some bacteria may, some areas of your body may not be so contaminated that the bacteria, natural way that we cleanse with bacteria when we're overloaded with toxicity or waste products, bacteria will help us. But when we are so toxic that the bacteria are poisoned by the tissue from chemical inundation, then we have to make solvents. Each cell makes a solvent.
Gotcha.
Each cell makes a soap to help clean itself.
Okay.
And it's a union. It's like a factory. They all, particular cells, get together and say, let's make this for us to help clean us. So they're making a soap to do that. So there's nothing dormant about it. It's just that when the accumulation of waste is so great and you can't use bacteria, then the cells make a solvent.
There you go. Okay.
And that's a flu. That's a virus.
Now, I want to start back at 1976, Agnes. What happened in 1976 with the swine flu vaccine?
Well, I was 29 and living in California at the time. And a doctor, McBean, from, I forgot her first name, she's an MD. She and Ida Onaroff, who was a consumer advocate and was nationwide syndicated on like 3,000 radio networks.
Right.
Those two women showed that the swine flu was a hoax and that the swine flu vaccine that Ford and Rockefeller pushed through, David Rockefeller was our vice president and owned controlling stock in many pharmaceuticals. They were behind this swine flu thing. Even Gerald Ford went on and received his swine flu shot. Of course, David Rockefeller didn't. And they showed that the swine flu was a hoax and that the vaccine was going to harm and kill people.
And it did, in fact. Didn't some people die? I mean, a large number of people died from the vaccine. Isn't that right?
Well, there were three that died right there at the poll immediately after they got it. According to Ida, I did a radio show with her. She had the figures that showed 2,300 people, elderly people, died within 2 weeks of the shot as a result of the shot. In other words, they didn't have the flu before they got the shot, and then they got the swine flu from the shot. That is the only way that a human being can get a bird flu or a swine flu is if it is injected in them. We do not have those tissue. Once a animal product goes into our stomach, it no longer holds the animal's tissue. It completely dissolves it and makes it into human tissue. So there's no way we can get a swine flu or a bird flu, avian flu, any other flu. Years ago, they used to blame it on racists, you know, the Spanish flu, the Mexican flu, and
right.
stuff like that.
Right.
Then when Rockefeller and Carnegie started taking over the universities in the early 1900s, shortly after that, after the Spanish flu incident, they started blaming everything on animals. Monkey flu, monkey AIDS, you know, all this stuff. They're always blaming an animal, a natural creature. They're always blaming nature. You cannot get a virus into another animal. Viruses are cellularly produced in their whole form. So if a human cell creates a virus, it can only be done inside a human body or in a test tube where you have human cells.
So there's no cross species
of flus. You
right.
can't do of viruses. It's impossible. Any kind of flu is the same thing. When the climate temperature is right, certain tissues will cleanse. and they may go in a 7-year cycle, they may have a 6-month cycle. It depends upon the tissue and how contaminated it is.
Mm.
If certain tissue needs to clean out every 2 years, it will create, and you can't use the bacteria, your body will create a solvent, a virus, that cleans that particular tissue every 2 years, every 6 months, every 3 months, every 7 years, every 12 years, depending upon that tissue and how contaminated it is. You cannot, herpes, you know, that's all a fiction of the pharmaceutical industry to sell drugs.
So in other words, if someone has a herpes, let's say a genital herpes,
yeah,
wouldn't they be able to transfer it to someone else, especially if it's a man to a woman, since the inside of the vagina is basically like mucous membrane? It doesn't have the same barrier as, like, it doesn't have a stratum corneum like the outer dermis does. Couldn't you transfer it that way then?
Well, can you? Do you think Tide soap is contagious?
No, it's not. I use it.
Okay. Yep. Okay. Tide soap isn't contagious. Solvents are not contagious. I can inject it into you.
And then?
And then you would get sick.
I got you. Okay.
And that's how people get the only way people can get swine flu is if they've taken animal a pig tissue, grown it in a solvent toxic environment, and then these swine cells create a virus to break itself down.
Okay. Now,
you can inject it into a human, and then you will find those actual swine tissue in there. It's just you have a waste product that now the body has to clean that waste product out of the body. And it's going to be very alarmed because you've got foreign tissue in there injected into the body.
Okay.
That's why Guillain-Barré disease, that's why anaphylactic shock occurs when you inject people with foreign debris, foreign tissue. It goes into shock. It can even die from the shock of foreign tissue being injected into you.
Okay. In the email that you sent me, you postulated that perhaps some of this vaccine that was created back in 76, which killed so many people, it has just been vaulted. It has not been destroyed, you say, correct?
Correct. They were supposed to destroy it, but my understanding from one laboratory technician that I know who works at that lab, they vaulted it. They put it in a vault.
Why? I mean, that makes no sense to me. Why they would even vault something that killed people?
Because there seems to be certain people out there, and even President Kennedy, a month before he died, said in a speech, there is a secret society that means to get rid of and annihilate certain people. You know, the Bush family was connected with Hitler. They financed Hitler. They're into annihilating people, to destroying, you know, races and stuff like that.
Right.
So you've got these people that Kennedy tried to warn us about because he was in that affluent society with many of those people.
Right.
And they intend to destroy a lot of the population as soon as the resources became very low. And the resources are getting pretty low, and we've got 6 billion people on the planet, and according to some of the information that's delivered to us, they want to get rid of 4.5 billion people.
So this is all part of the New World Order process that's occurring supposedly here in the country.
Well, that's, some people call it New Order, World Order, other people call it other things, skull and bone, you know, groups,
right,
from Yale.
Right.
Yeah, so that's part of it. And they gave the task of looking at overpopulation to Henry Kissinger back in the 60s. And he wrote a paper that's about 280-some pages. I think that's about 260. And he talks about the greatest way to get rid of overpopulation is to inject people with contaminated medications.
Really? He wrote that?
Yes. And you can look at the paper, look under overpopulation, Henry Kissinger, run his search engine, and you'll come up with that paper. And then that was given to the NSA, National Security Association, also the military, and, you know, the government secret services. And they all voted on a particular proposition, I forgot the number, 281, something like that. And that gave the military and secret services, secret military divisions, the right to start biological warfare and experimentation on U.S. citizens.
So now this vaccine that was manufactured that killed all those people that has since been vaulted for no apparent good reason, how would it have found its way?
No, the apparent reason is that they want to reuse it.
No, that's something, but it's not a good reason. I'm saying it's a reason, but it's not a good reason. The reason is a...
it's not a healthy and,
yeah,
and
it's a sinister,
compassionate
yeah.
and humanitarian idea.
Right, it's sinister. It's a sinister reason. So how does it find its way to Mexico?
Well, a few months ago, the Mexican government gave out free flu vaccines.
That's what I was going to ask. Were these people vaccinated?
Yes. So obviously they were given this, you know, some of the swine flu vaccine was taken out of the vault, given to the Mexican authorities, probably with a lot of money in their pocket. And they gave it to, you know, some clinics, and then it was being injected into people. And then when people got such a reaction, then it was, you know, they found swine tissue in their bloodstream and in their kidneys maybe and their bladders. You know, that's about the only place you could really find it and detect it.
Right.
In a laboratory test. So they find it, and then you have to understand that, see how this media campaign is so fast?
Oh, I know. It's explosive.
It already had to be have been set up. They were already ready for the cases to be discovered. You can't have 85 cases show up and all of a sudden, oh my God, you know, we've got a epidemic on our hands that could be a pandemic.
Why would a backwoods hospital 40 miles outside of Seattle in a town of 100,000 people test a man with a cough for an unknown coronavirus from across the world that had only killed 6 people at that time? And how would the Washington Post find out about it immediately? Why was the lab instructed to test for coronavirus specifically? And how did they already have a sample of traces of the coronavirus to test his blood, liver, and kidney tissues against for a positive match? At the time, only 6 people were allegedly dead and a few hundred sick in a city of 11 million people halfway across the world. That hospital couldn't think of any other reason a person might have a cough, fever, or respiratory trouble. Are you starting to see the game yet? 5G is going to make people very sick wherever it is turned on. They need you to believe this is the culprit.
To be reported, they would have to show that they're very unusual cases. They would have to, even when they go to have the laboratory test something, it never tests for anything that the laboratory is not directed to test for.
And I was just going to ask you that. I mean, they would have had to specifically been looking for swine flu in these individuals.
Exactly. So this has all been set up. It's a whole media campaign to sell what? They're trying to sell Donald Rumsfeld's Tamiflu.
I know. I'm getting emails.
They're going to pull the swine flu out of the vaults again and start selling the swine flu vaccine.
I've been inundated with emails from Canadian pharmacies telling me to stop buying Tamiflu now before it runs out. That's amazing. You said that. I got like 3 emails today alone from 3 different Canadian pharmacies.
Yeah. Well, the media is recommending people use Tamiflu to fight against the swine flu. All you have to do to fight against the swine flu is never get an injection from a doctor. The only way you can get any kind of foreign animal tissue into your body is by injection.
Yeah, you're right. It makes perfect sense. Now, you say that AIDS was created in a laboratory.
Yes, in UCLA. University of California, Los Angeles, 1961 and 62. They created a mixture. What they did was combine the waste product, the virus of a bovine, the lymphonomic virus of a sheep, and the leukemic virus of a bovine. The way you can only get a virus, like I said, is if the tissue is so toxic with chemicals that bacteria can't do their normal janitorial work and eat the organic tissue and then reduce the waste and eliminate little waste. When your body makes a solvent, the way that to which is a virus, a solvent is a virus, it's a soap, it's not alive. There's no nucleus, no respiratory system, no digestive tract, no circulatory system. There's none of that. So it's not alive. It's a waste product.
Right.
It's dissolved animal tissue.
Right.
Okay. Specific animal tissue. So what they do is they take animal tissue and put it in a petri dish in a contaminated environment, but with enough solution to keep them alive. So the cells start taking themselves apart with solvents. And will eventually kill the cell. This virus will kill the cell. It'll kill itself by poisoning itself and taking itself apart.
I want to ask you to elaborate more about the AIDS virus. So the AIDS virus is created in a lab at UCLA. For what purpose would they create something like that?
They were trying to create, according to the records that I got to see, and they were discovered by a Dr. Robert Strecker. I'm a nutritional doctor, got my PhD in nutrition. Dr. Strecker has like four doctorates, and one is in biochemistry and virology.
Right.
Now, the only way that you can make a virus is to put it in a petri dish with the animal tissue. Okay, the only way that animal tissue can ever get into a human is if it is injected
right.
or another animal.
Right.
So what they did was they incubated these two diseases from both a sheep and a cow, the leukemic virus of a cow, the bovine, and the lymphonomic virus of a sheep. They put those two together and created a new kind of deadly biological warfare disease.
So was that the reason for it? Were they trying to come up with a new biohazard, a new biological warfare?
Well, they could have been the reason, but they put in their paperwork it was to create cancer. It was to force cancer in laboratory animals so they could study cancer.
Okay.
That is very suspicious reasoning to me. To come up with something
deadly like
that.
Yeah, because there's already lots of agents out there that will cause spontaneous tumor and cancers in rats.
Exactly. I mean, you can put cadmium in it, and you
right.
can have kidney cancer in weeks, you
right.
know, overloading with cadmium. There are lots of ways. So this was a suspicious reasoning for me, to my thinking. But it was done. Dr. Strecker called his brother, who was an attorney, and said, "This is where it leads. Follow it." So his brother checked the NSA, the War Department, and yes, that information had been sent to those departments, and it was allowed, it was given the green light to be used in experiments. So he found out the experiments were undesirables. They figured that in these particular committees
right.
that the undesirables were homosexuals.
Right.
Now, how could they administer this to homosexuals to see the consequences this particular formulation?
Well, you just have to find homosexuals who are also intravenous drug users and then spike the heroin or the speed or whatever they're shooting with some of this stuff, I guess.
No, you still can't get a good population that way.
Okay.
What they found was that in Los Angeles, New York City, Houston, and San Francisco, that 90% of the people who were being treated for hepatitis were homosexuals because they used a lot of drugs, damaged the liver. So hepatitis is a viral detoxification because there's so many chemicals in the liver, your bacteria from the liver can't clean it. So your body has to, the liver cells have to make solvents, which are again viruses. So it makes a self-cleansing substance. So all of your hepatitises are diseases trying to reverse a toxic condition where the liver is about to stop working completely. When you get to hepatitis, that means your liver is in terrible shape. So no bacteria can help you.
So you're saying they contaminated the hepatitis vaccine?
B vaccine.
Oh.
With this AIDS virus. And they injected, that's why 10% of the population in those cities who got AIDS were not homosexuals, they were heterosexuals.
Oh my God.
Then they went and put it in the smallpox vaccine. The U.S. government and the U.K. government donated hundreds of millions of dollars of smallpox vaccine to African countries. Then all of these do good meaning groups, you know, go out and administer and going to save the world by giving all these vaccines to African children and everybody to save their lives, were, you know, from smallpox, were given this AIDS virus in the smallpox vaccine.
That's amazing.
125 million were donated. How many cases of AIDS were propped up in Africa within a year?
I don't know that number, but I remember it was like half the population.
95 million.
Right.
75 million people died. Then what the U.S. government and the U.K. government did, went to those countries and said, listen, we have, you know, help for AIDS. We have chemotherapy, which is AZT.
Right.
We have chemotherapy that we can help your people with. We can help you stop this disease. We can treat your people. We'll bring the medical in, but you will owe us a lot of money. Now, they charge so much money that no way these countries could pay back. So when all of was done and said and done, and all these people were dead, and very few people ever came through the AIDS without death, the U.S. government, U.K. government says, oh, you owe us this much money. If you can't pay it, you owe us your country's resources.
Wow.
So they turned over the country's resources to be run by the World Bank. So that we took over, the U.S. government and the U.K. government took over 27 African countries with that AIDS hoax and inundation.
That's amazing.
It's just like they used a different kind of warfare to usurp another country's, you know, resources.
Shocking.
It's like war, like, you know, any... The Spanish, you know, the Romans,
it's
the
Greeks. It's a stealth. They're waging a stealth war, because almost like a Trojan horse war, because they are being perceived as, they're being invited in, they're being perceived as the saviors, but they're really the ones creating the problem so that they can come in and finish the job.
Now, absolutely. And if you read the book, Confessions of a Financial Hitman, I think that's the title. It talks of this man who worked for the U.S. government and the CIA. They went in and, you know, loaned great amounts of money to foreign countries, foreign governments that could never pay it back and then would take over their resources.
Wow. Look,
that's the same thing they did with this AIDS incident.
Something that I never gave much thought to. You know, I was born in 1958, and... I don't have the mark on my arm from a polio vaccine, so I don't know that I ever got it. But
uh-huh.
I remember it was very popular back then. And you pointed something out that was really interesting. While people were running to get the polio vaccine, there were large numbers of people who were not getting the vaccine, and they were not seeing the outbreak in polio. For instance, the Amish and the Mennonites, they didn't go for the polio vaccine back then, and their kids didn't get polio. And the other interesting thing is all these third world countries, why are they not overrun by polio today if they're not getting these vaccines?
Well, because it's another hoax. Polio is a disease that comes out maybe every 28 years, and it'll have its peak and diminish. Sometimes it will be strong, but it's usually every maybe 240 years of polio will create a severe reaction in humans. Now, polio is a poliomyelitis. Everybody has it. It's a bacterial detoxification of the spinal cord. So it usually takes many, many generations before the spinal cord will get that toxic to where, you know, a whole race will have to go through a heavy detoxification at the same time. That doesn't mean it's contagious. It means that the toxicity builds up all in the whole race at a particular time, and everybody needs to cleanse their spinal cords at the same time. So it's not a contagious thing. But the detoxification came necessary right after canned foods came into being during the World War II. So 1945 to 1947, canned foods became a regular staple of our supermarkets. So people were eating tin. Metal combinations, amalgams of metals that were implanting themselves in the spinal cord because the nervous system uses a lot of metallic minerals to conduct electricity and transfer light. So all of these free radical metals coming from tin were getting into the spinal cord. Mm-hmm. So by mid-1950s, we had a huge amount of cases of polio. And they weren't in the people who were eating normal food. They were in the more affluent neighborhoods who were living on canned foods like, you know, my parents did. They loved the new era of technology.
Right.
So they came up with a polio vaccine, and that was breeding polio tissue, monkey spinal cords. You know, they would decompose that tissue and then say this is going to prevent disease. And in that was liquid mercury, liquid aluminum, formaldehyde, ether, and detergent. Those were just five of the 68 ingredients. All the other ingredients are labeled inert. Inert for what? And what is an inert matter? Doesn't mean it's not non-toxic.
Right.
It just means that it's not indicated as part of the solution of the problem given.
Hmm.
But it's very toxic material. So you have all of these toxic substances. Now, when the polio vaccine came out in 1958, it was a year after polio almost became extinct. It was down to 1% of the normally infected population that had preceded before it. Not 1% of the whole population, but all of the people who had been infected, it was down to 1% of the highest rate of infection.
So they introduced the vaccine on the heels of it going away on its own, in other words.
Not only the heels, actually the trail. So they took complete, you know, credit for getting rid of polio. It was already gone.
And you point out that in other countries, polio is not a problem, and they don't get polio vaccines.
Correct.
Do we still give children polio vaccines today?
Absolutely. They get three in their lifetime, minimum of three. And after I got my third, I got angina pectoris and diabetes.
Oh, wow.
Within days after my third vaccine.
And that's another right. thing. I mean, that, you know, they're pushing that that what is that human papillomavirus vaccine on a lot of young girls now, and they're trying to make the parents feel guilty if they
guilty,
don't let their.
Yeah.
I would
yeah.
never let my kids get a vaccine of any type whatsoever.
Absolutely, they're all poison, and there's no record that they ever prevent anything. When I was in Paris studying at the Sorbonne, Pasteur's material. I had to have somebody help me because I don't do well in French. and it was all written in French, of course.
Right.
And he, not one of the animals he ever vaccinated lived.
Really?
Not one ever lived. They all died of anaphylactic shock or severe flus. Now, how can you say, oh, you're likely to get, you know, some kind of disease and you take this, you're going to prevent it? When many people who get the vaccines actually get the disease.
Anyway,
in fact, there was 1% of all that. In 1958, there were three states and one city that kept record of polio cases. And they found that the numbers went all the way up to 484% increase in polio. All of them, all of the cases among people who had received three or more vaccines. polio vaccines. So when you're injected polio tissue into somebody, you're going to give them polio.
Well, I went for a flu shot when I was a young adult, when I lived in Las Vegas. My mother called me and said, you know, the flu's going around, you should go get a flu shot. And I never thought about it. And I thought, okay, I'll go. You know, I got a flu shot, and 3 days later, I had all the symptoms of a flu. I was sick and down and out for about 2 days. And
you were given a flu.
Yeah, and I thought to myself, I'm never going to do that again. Well, that would be stupid.
Absolutely is stupid. There's not one person that doesn't get sick from a flu vaccine. They may get a little nauseous. They may have diarrhea. They may have some vomit. They may get dizzy. They may get very sleepy for days. Everybody has a reaction.
So there's the key. If you never want to get the swine flu, don't go get the swine flu vaccine. There you go.
Don't get any injection. You never know what's in them.
In part two, who's behind it, how they planned it, and why they're doing it.